Welcome to the Kitchen Table Finance Podcast, where we make retirement planning easy and enjoyable. Discover practical advice to create a retirement strategy that fits your lifestyle and budget. Get ready for market updates, intriguing finance headlines, book reviews, special guests, and inspiring case studies. So grab your favorite cup of coffee and join us at the table as we talk about everything finance and retirement. We're here to support you in achieving the retirement of your dreams. Let's jump right in.
Hey, Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Nick. How are you?
Doing well. Podcasting a day early today. We'll see how this goes.
Throws the whole week off. What'll I do with my Friday?
Yeah, right? Sleep in, maybe. Who knows?
Don't count on it.
Interesting topic today, as we are kind of coming off a lot of our, we do quite a few client meetings in the first quarter of the year. And we're kind of coming off of those meetings. And one of the things that kind of emerged from that is just this thought process around looking at the markets and looking at all different sections of the markets. Does it make sense to even diversify, or should I just take the, Warren Buffett approach that he made a bet on and just buy the S&P 500 and don't worry about anything else?
By way of background, U.S. large company stocks have been the right pick in the market now going back all the way to the financial crisis, pretty much with little blips in between, but have been, if we're just talking about stocks, right, that's been the place to be. And I went back and looked, you and I both, when we pulled up these numbers to put this podcast together, were a little bit staggered by the actual numbers behind this. I mean, we knew like the last, 12 months, 18 months, this was the case, but going back to the market bottom in March of 2009, the S&P 500 is up 663% cumulatively. Yeah. That's just crazy. Meanwhile, if you had invested in developed international stocks, you're only up 154%, which, okay, that's, doubling your money and then some, right?
Right.
But, it is not 663%. And emerging markets, 123%.
Right.
So, there's lots of different slices to the market. And this same argument applies whether we're talking about value stocks versus growth stocks, small stocks versus large stocks. But for today, we just focused on international versus U.S. large companies, because it's just got to pick something to talk about, right? So yeah, why if the U.S. market consistently beats, and we're talking 2009 to 2024 here, that's a pretty good run.
Yeah.
why buy anything else? There's some things that kind of lie behind that. One is we tend to have a home bias anyway. If you look at portfolios and how they're allocated across markets, American investors tend to own more American stocks.
Right.
So that's already kind of built into the way portfolios are constructed usually. We hear a lot from professional managers saying, hey, you need to not be so focused. Kind of the opposite of what we hear from individuals. Like, why? We've got the individual investor saying, why would we own anything else? And we've got, professionals saying, hey, don't forget, you need to be diversified. You need to own these other, you shouldn't just focus on the U.S. So there's home bias, there's recency bias, right? And that's when we're just looking at 2009 to 2024 doesn't feel like recent necessarily. It's going back, a fairly good stretch here over time, but not truly a meaningful long-term in the history of markets and economies. So there's recency bias. There's that. I guess this kind of goes with home bias. We always hear invest in what you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we feel like we know General Motors and IBM and Microsoft more than we might know Sanofi or some of these international companies. And you've got currency fluctuations and different things in there and political, like we can bemoan our own political situation, but we at least feel like we have a hand in it, I guess, in a way that maybe we don't in Germany or Italy or England or, you know, I don't even understand what parliament is kind of situation. So there's a little bit of that. And then, you know, back to like actual portfolio construction, one of the main reasons you diversify is that you want assets that are going to move different from one another in different time periods. And as the world globalizes, we've seen a diminished effect of diversification, but it's not gone.
So I think too, you know, the like behavioral economics part of this is like, if you give any kid this, like, these three things and say, hey, which one of these would you buy? Like,
right.
The default is, well, why would I not buy the one that's crushing everything all the time?
Yeah. Right?
Like,
yeah.
That's like the easy answer without like thinking about it. And so it's really hard to train our brains to do potentially the opposite of what the easy answer is, right?
Right. Right. But there is still value in diversifying out of the US market into international stocks. They are not perfectly correlated. I think it's around 0.8 now. So like for every 1% move in the US, you'd predict a 0.8% move in international stocks right now. And it's a little different with emerging markets. I don't have the number on the top of my head, but I guess maybe a better way to look at it is to look at some examples in history where this diversification effect really made a difference. And as it so happens, we only have to go back to the market cycle before the current one, which basically, like if we look at from the tech bubble through the financial crisis, basically the early aughts, as we call them now, the early 2000s, Daniel Crosby, one of our favorite behavioral finance writers, he looked at this, he called, you know, he basically said that that's called the lost decade for US stocks because the S&P 500, I'm not sure exactly what dates he was using. We're going to look a little more scientifically here in a second. But he said, you know, about a 1% annualized return for the S&P 500, while he compared that to a basket of like an equal weighted portfolio of US international stocks, commodities, real estate, and bonds, you know, figure 20% each and rebalancing every year, you get a 7.2% annualized return versus one. So that rule of the S&P 500 always being top of the heap obviously doesn't hold true outside of this market cycle. I went back and plugged into our performance software. I used January 1st, 2000 through December 31st of 2010 and put in the S&P 500, the developed markets index, the emerging market index, and then compared it to an index version using the equity portion of the models that we build. Right. And what we get is about a 0.41% S&P 500 return. So that's annualized. So just barely showing a profit over 10 years. And that's where that lost decade idea comes in, right? Yeah. You've got an index that historically has averaged 10%, but during that 10 years didn't even top 1%.
Right.
The developed markets index over that same time period tripled that return, still only 1.75% annualized return, but three times what the S&P 500 did. Meanwhile, emerging markets, the crazy small economies that are like trying to become developed markets, average 10.57% over that period.
Do you work for Michigan State University? Are you looking for solid retirement planning advice? Reach out to Dave and Nick, hosts of the Kitchen Table Finance Podcast and Certified Financial Advisors. They specialize in the unique benefit plans offered by MSU and how to capitalize on all you have available to you through your investments. Sure, you can glance at your package once a year and check some boxes, or you can make your money work for you. Find out if you're getting everything you could be with your MSU retirement plan by contacting Shotwell Rudder Bear Financial Planners at srbadvisors.com or simply search for the Kitchen Table Finance Podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. That's the Kitchen Table Finance Podcast, hosted by Shotwell Rudder Bear Financial Planners.
The inverse question, like if I had come to you in 2009 and said, right, Nick, emerging markets is where it's at. Let's put all your money in emerging market right, stocks. You would have thought I was an alien, right? Right. You would have been like, get out of here. And, I'll take my diversified or home biased portfolio,
right,
even though it's been wrong for the last 10 years.
Exactly.
So, when you find yourself saying things like, why would we diversify out of the U.S.? Remember that if it wasn't the U.S., you probably wouldn't even raise that question, or you wouldn't say, let's put all our money in real estate or let's put all our money in bonds either. So just keep that in mind. And then I kind of, for comparison, put our diversified model, which has emerging markets, and it's not quite the equal weight model that Crosby used, but I got a 3.4% return over that 10 years. So better than emerging or better than developed markets in the S&P 500, not the 10.5% annualized return. But boy, remembering living through those two big market crashes, and, mm-hmm, I'd have been pretty happy to know if I'd known in 2008 that we were going to come out of that decade with an annualized return of 3.4, I'd have been a pretty happy dude.
Yeah, right. Well, it's an interesting context too, Dave, if we take it in terms of like looking at retirement. The benefit of diversification is the benefit is the lows aren't as low. The downside, mm-hmm, is the highs aren't as high, right?
Right, right.
And when you're thinking about retirement and needing, to generate income from your portfolio, yeah, in that 10-year time frame, if you had everything in the S&P 500 and you average less than 0.5%, that's going to cause some serious issues, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, that's where thinking of it in terms of, reducing the lowest lows and getting a little bit better return makes a ton, mm-hmm, of sense, especially in that income phase of retirement versus, exactly, right now in the last 10 years or so, and the S&P did 600 or 15 years, whatever that time frame was, mm-hmm, you'd be a little bit bummed, but you still had a decent return because you still generated it.
Right.
With a portion of your portfolio, you just didn't get all of it, right?
One of the things that always comes to my mind when I hear this kind of talk is one of the underlying mechanisms behind what makes the stock market tick, whether it's U.S. markets or developed markets. One of the things we look at is valuations. What are you buying when you buy a stock? You're buying that company's earnings, their projected earnings in the future, and earnings, right, growth. Mm-hmm. And the higher the stock price, the more you're paying for those expected earnings. The more that stock that company has to perform to justify, right, that stock price, right?
Right.
And so as the U.S. market has risen relative to other markets, valuations on U.S. stocks are very high right now, mm-hmm, while emerging markets and developed markets, you're not paying as much per dollar of expected earnings.
Right.
So the valuation difference, I like to think of it like water. Mm-hmm. Money in the markets is like water, and it's going to flow eventually into the lower valuations and raise, right, those up, right? They're going to balance, yeah, out at some point. So right now, it's like right now that hill between the two, that slope is getting steeper, and that water at some point starts flowing into those other asset classes and bringing, right, that up, or bringing the U.S. down relatively, mm-hmm, so that they even out over time. And, we always say that we can't predict the markets on a short-term basis, but you can look at valuations and get a pretty good idea of whether the simplest way to put it, if valuations are higher than average, you'd expect longer-term returns are going to be lower than average until those, right, even out. So, mm-hmm, so right now we've got a situation where our expected return on the U.S. markets over, say, 10 years is lower, while our expected return on international and emerging markets is higher.
Just kind of relating that a little bit. If you think about it in terms of like those, when you have those higher valuations, you basically have to be perfect to live up to those expectations, right? where if you have pretty low valuations, you don't, you know, just it's much easier to be a little bit better than people thought and drive your price up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's room for error, right? Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. If you're always an A student, the B minus looks a lot worse than if you're a C plus student.
You get a B. You know?
Exactly. So anyway.
So, and, you know, counterintuitive to, you know, like we talked about in the beginning, if you look at those three, you know, returns, you're going to lean towards the S&P 500, but the, you know, actually the opposite valuation wise.
If you look at valuations,
you should think twice about that.
Yeah, I have this under our keys to success when you think about these things. But the more people get excited about the U.S., the more I think, okay, you know, the more people that would say to us, hey, you know, why are we bothering with international? The more I'm thinking, oh boy, it's time to, we're getting closer to the time when that shifts, right? And, you know, the analogy is, the thing I always think about as a real world example is back in 2000 and when your 80-year-old grandmother would come into a broker's office and say, I need to buy MCI WorldCom or, you know, whatever .com sector, blah, 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 you got going. Cause that's where all the value is. Like the last mm-hmm. of the last is going in there. So it's time to get out.
Well, that's, you know, the hard part of diversification is there's always that FOMO, right? Like if you're diversified and something else is doing really well, it's that natural reaction to like, hey, I don't want to miss out on this.
Like Michael Kitsis always says, diversification means always having to say you're sorry. You know, there's always going to be a clunker in there if you're doing it right. And Crosby, back to him, he's, you know, he always says diversification is an exercise in humility. You're basically admitting that you don't know what the next hot asset is going to be, where those returns are going to flow next. And you're saying we need to own a little bit of everything because we can't anticipate. Well,
and just looking back on like the US and having the, and just thinking about that, you know, 5 years ago, we probably would have been justified of like moving a bunch out of the US and international if we're just looking at valuations. And we would have been completely wrong because the US continued and does still today continue to do very well, right?
Yeah. Well, the other old cliche about the market can be irrational a lot longer than you can stay liquid. You know,
I like that.
I think that might be John Bogle. Yeah, that's the flip side of it too. Is don't try to guess that just because valuations are stretched, it's time to get out of something.
Yeah,
you can be wrong that way too. Make your plan based on long-term expectations, set those percentages, rebalance regularly. You know, that's where you see something like that higher return in the so-called lost decade of the early aughts. I love that because it sounds so old-timey. But, you know, that's where you see that diversification pay off. It's because because things will switch back and move back and you take advantage of what's high. You buy what's low, but stick to a discipline. Write it out.
If it was easy, everybody would do it, right?
It's part of why it works is because it's not easy. It can't be arbitraged away because there's always going to be people that are going to chase the hot performance.
Well, this was great. Hopefully we answered some questions, Dave, on diversification and the importance. If our listeners have any questions, feel free to shoot us an email at info@srbadvisors.com. Dave, as always, it's been a pleasure.
You bet, Nick. It was fun.
Gather around and follow the Kitchen Table Finance podcast to learn about money and simple ways you can invest right now. You can find more practical advice at srbadvisors.com and contact the team for personal planning by emailing info@srbadvisors.com.
This is a Zedia Media production.